Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, there's a little crisp bite of air, something in the season. I don't know what I was going to say there.
Is nipping at your hiney?
That's right. There's something nipping at my hiney out there. It's fall. It's October. That can only mean one thing. It's around the corner. Halloween.
Halloween. Woo. So We've been getting everybody in the mood with all our Halloween-type shows, right?
No, not yet.
What do you mean, not yet? We're going to talk about ghosts and phantoms today, right?
Well, kind of. We're talking about something kind of spooky.
Yeah.
Sends shivers down a lot of people's spines.
What's that?
Tax.
Tax?
That's right.
Oh, all right. Well, I was just thinking last week was pretty Halloween-y, too. I mean, we talked about creeper robot dolls and having sex with pumpkins.
Well, I guess
so. That was kind of Halloween too. I mean, I don't know why you were so hung up on having sex with pumpkins, but you just kept bringing that up.
Yeah, I don't know why I was either. I don't seem to remember it that way, but I seem the conversation always was going back to that.
I was just answering your questions. You had questions about it, and I was just answering your questions. But the one thing, you know, that we didn't cover.
What's that?
You know what happens when pumpkins have sex?
What?
They jack-o'-lantern.
A jack-o'-lantern?
Do you get it?
Oh, I get it. That seems a little forced. Didn't quite flow off the tongue like some of the puns do.
Well, you know, what do you got? It's a free show, you know. How good can the quality be?
Yeah. I don't know. But this show's about taxes, but it's also about something that's kind of not just any kind of tax, but a certain kind of taxing situation that arises in a certain circumstance. It's called phantom income.
Phantom income. Wah! That makes it sound more Halloween-y.
That sounds super Halloween-y.
Yeah.
And so you want to know what phantom income is? Well,
I want to know. Inquiring minds want to know.
It is not when you get paid to haunt an old amusement park by Old Man Withers to scare people away so you can sell the property.
It's not. That'd be like on Scooby-Doo.
He would have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for those kids.
Is that Scooby-Doo set up?
I think it was. But that is not phantom income, getting paid to be a ghost.
It's not.
It is not.
Oh, man, it sounds like it. Is it when you rent your ghost out to haunted places to make them haunted?
No.
No, that's not it either.
It's not proceeds from a haunted house. Huh? So what it is actually pretty simple. It doesn't happen a lot, but it's simple theory. It's money that you don't actually pocket or put into your bank account, but because the money is imputed to you, it shows up on income statements, and it's able to be taxed by the IRS.
Well, that doesn't hardly sound fair.
It doesn't sound fair at all, does it?
No.
But it happens. Not doesn't happen all the time. It's not something that people see every year, but there's certain circumstances where it may happen.
If it happens to you, do you know it, or does it just disappear mysteriously?
Well, you have to have like one of those ghost meter thingies to see if it pops up or not.
Ghostbusters, a Slimer thing.
No, you usually do know when you have phantom income because you get some sort of notice from whoever is kind of imputing that income to you.
Mm.
And I'll talk about that here in a minute.
That does not impute.
One of the main circumstances. So one way that you can get phantom income is if there's a domestic partnership. So basically, if your employer offers health benefits to you and someone other than your spouse, like a domestic partner, not married, they may actually have to pay taxes on the portion of the health insurance that they get from your employer.
Because they gained a financial benefit and didn't pay anything for it?
Exactly, yeah. It's kind of a taxable event. They're getting some sort of benefit from it, and there's no taxes being paid on it, and the tax man wants their cut. So,
well, this might be unfair to ask you, but what if you were a married couple, but you filed separately, and the spouse received benefits?
That I don't know. And before we go,
sounds like it's the same type thing.
Sounds similar. Before we go any farther, I feel it proper to give an appropriate disclaimer. Let's back up the bus. Well, back it up.
If the first opening one, if you've become numb to it, you didn't listen to it.
Yeah.
Don't take Mike's advice on anything.
Yeah, I am not a tax lawyer. Let's go ahead and put that out there. Do not rely on this podcast for tax advice. You should see a tax lawyer, a CPA, an accountant, maybe all of them.
Most anybody. Yeah. Just don't listen to what Mike says.
Yeah. I have just enough understanding about this stuff to get us into trouble. So there you go. I don't think that they would have to pay taxes on that.
Okay. There you have it. It's gospel. Don't pay taxes.
Now, I've actually never had experience with phantom income with regards to medical benefits from employers. The next kind of way that you can have phantom income, I've actually saw quite a bit in Florida about 10 years ago. And this is basically forgiven debt. Basically, if you have credit card debt or some sort of loan is forgiven, the lender who forgave it may elect to report that to the IRS on a form 1099-C cancellation of debt. So they would basically, you say, the way I saw this a lot of times in Florida, if you may remember that we had the kind of the housing crisis.
Right.
And what happens is a lot of people,
Everybody was upside down, underwater on their houses.
In their house. So mm-hmm. they might
Counting the hurricane.
Yeah. They might have $400,000 on their house, but they all of a sudden the value of their house is only $200,000.
Yeah.
So they are $200,000 upside down in their house.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different ways that this cancellation of debt or imputed income could come around. There could be a foreclosure sale where basically they file a foreclosure action and foreclose on the house, and then basically the house will be sold on the courthouse steps to help satisfy the proceeds of the loan. And then basically they could seek an excess judgment for against you for whatever it didn't cover.
Right.
Or alternatively, they can just cancel that debt out and give you a 1099-C, and basically you would owe taxes on that because you're essentially getting the benefit of it. So it's kind of like a double whammy.
Yeah, so like $200,000, if it was a $400,000 you owed and they sold it for $200,000, then they could say that you benefited $200,000 in income?
Yeah, and it's taxed at regular income. So just like a $200,000 salary. So it's a huge tax bill. The other way this could happen a lot is if they did what's called a short sale, which is kind of a similar thing. Have you ever heard of the term short sale?
I've heard of it, but I thought that was when Toulouse-Lautrec bought a drink.
Who?
Toulouse-Lautrec.
What?
Who?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Toulouse-Lautrec?
Yeah. The famous artist that was very short in stature?
No, not ringing any not bells working. Here.
Huh.
No.
All right. How about Mini-Me? If Mini-Me were to buy a drink, would that be a short sale?
It would be a short sale. Wow, you're getting some deep cuts in here. I don't know what you're talking about. Even more so than usual. So essentially, a short sale is when you sell the house for less than what you owe on the mortgage. So if you're underwater and you sell it for basically the lesser price. Now, the lender, the bank who owns the mortgage on the house, they have to agree to accept that lesser amount and allow the sale to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll basically say, the house, you owe us $400,000 again on the house. And you say, well, I got a buyer here who's going to pay $250,000 for it. Will you agree to that? And in this housing market that we had a few years ago, lenders were saying, sure, we want to get some of our money back. So what they would do is they would sign off on it. And then basically the homeowner would think, great, I've got this burden off my back. Well, ends up they have a $150,000 tax bill. Not tax bill, but they're taxed on the $150,000 for this cancellation of debt. Because essentially the bank can either sue them again and try to collect on that, or just cancel it out and write it off. And a lot of them were electing just to write it off because, you know, they can't pursue it against somebody who doesn't have money anyway.
Man, these tax bill references keep making me think of that Beatles song that keeps running through my head.
Yeah, the tax man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so essentially, I mean, you can kind of see the theory about where this income comes from because you're getting the benefit of whatever it is that they are actually writing off.
Well, that really worries me because I believe that's going to happen to me sometime in the future.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, student loans. Paying back student loans. And they have that payment plan now where you can pay them back and you only have to pay on them for 20 years.
Right.
At the end of 20 years, whatever you've paid, that's it. But they can count what's left over as income against you.
Yeah, you'll get taxed on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically...
That could be a significant amount, and I'll be in my golden years if I even make it that far. Well, so my plan is to die before those 20 years are up, and that'll teach them.
Well, I selfishly hope you don't, so...
It's the only way to get out from under the debt, or else I got to fake my death and go live down in the Keys or something.
The Keys isn't far enough. That's still...
I'll be off the grid. I'll be living under the name Jimmy B.
Jimmy B?
Yeah.
Yeah. Underneath the 7 mile bridge.
That's right.
I've snorkeled underneath the 7 mile bridge.
Well, cruise on down to A1A.
Now, in order to deal with this cancellation of debt problem that was happening a lot, Congress passed what was called the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act to kind of help ease this.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what they basically said is if this was your home or your primary residence and you incurred this phantom income from it, that based upon this, you were not going to be taxed on it.
Wow, that's a good break.
It was a really good break, and it helped out a lot of people.
You mean the government helped somebody?
They actually did.
I can't believe it. They must have screwed up. They probably had the opposite intention, and they just didn't pay attention.
They put a sunset on it because it's actually no longer in effect. I think it expired at the end of 2017 or something like that. So it was kind of a Band-Aid to fix the housing bubble, which was created by the government as well.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
In a way. Yeah, and a lot of people down in Florida really took advantage of that when it happened, because when you're staring down the face of a huge tax bill like that, it's pretty much bad news.
Absolutely.
So, now there's another way that you can actually get rid of this cancellation of debt as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into that, but before we get into that, I think there might be some new motions pending before the court today.
Yes, your tax lordship. Would like to...
Whoa. Maybe you didn't hear my disclaimer. I am not a tax lordship.
We would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket today?
We have a brand new advertiser with us that we want you to sit up, grab your bootstraps, and pay attention, because we have Robinhood.
Now, Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free.
They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy.
Now, I've used the app, and I can tell you it is a very non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence.
It's simple and intuitive, with clear design, with data presented in an easy-to-digest way, and everything is in real time.
Now, one of the cool things about Robinhood, which I mentioned earlier, is the cost. There's no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits.
The design and ease of use is just, it's easy to understand their charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone.
Now, I'll tell you, a lot of people throw out the word intuitive when they talk about websites and apps and things like that.
And me.
And you.
And when they talk about me,
you're
how intuitive I am.
Yeah.
No, I fit right in there with those apps.
Well, you're the opposite of this app, because this app is easy to understand. There's no arcane references.
There's not just smartphones. There's smart people.
But no, I mean, you can look up things very easily. It's very intuitive. The first time I used it, I was flying on it in no time at all. Super easy to use. And the cool thing is, too, is that, you know, you can kind of learn by doing it as well.
Well, the Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections, 100 most popular sectors like entertainment and social media, and curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, or sell for every stock.
It's a pretty cool app. You just got to get in there and try it.
Yeah.
And right now, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio.
What? A free stock?
Free stock.
Courtesy of listening to this ad on this podcast?
That's right. You sign up at court.robinhood.com.
It's not any harder than that. Just go to court.robinhood.com and get your free share of stock.
Happy trading.
Yes, for free.
So now the other way that you can actually get rid of this canceled debt is there's an insolvency exclusion in the tax code. So the only bad thing about to use that, though, is that your total liabilities have to exceed your total assets. So the obvious problem with this method of forgiveness is that you have to really have nothing that you can use to show that you can't really have anything.
Well, there's a lot of people in that situation.
Yeah, but that's not the one you want to rely on. So, but that's the other way around this cancellation of debt. The other thing is, too, debts which are forgiven as part of a bankruptcy proceeding are not subject to be taxed either.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, and you got to think this is pretty much the theory behind bankruptcy is that if you're filing bankruptcy, you aren't financially solvent to begin with, usually.
Correct.
So what good would it do to pile on a bunch of debt on top of you when basically the purpose of bankruptcy is to try to get people to get a fresh start and start over? So that's why they don't have the cancellation of debt 1099s on bankruptcy and forgiven debts there. So,
well, that's good of them. That's what I need, a fresh start.
Yeah. One other way you could actually get some phantom income, you might have heard the term sweat equity.
Sweat equity, uh-huh. That's when you don't have any money, but you're willing to work.
That's right. And so, say you and I go into some sort of partnership, and I put up some money, and you put up sweat equity, mm-hmm. and then you get half the stock. Well, you can get imputed income for basically for the value of the stock that you received, and you actually, in theory, should be taxed on that.
So, like, if the company made $100,000 in profits and we were 50-50 partners, mm-hmm. then I would be subject to paying tax on $50,000 that, even if I didn't really get the cash, even if it was just like in the business.
Well, it depends. I mean,
if it was a partnership,
but in theory, that money wouldn't have passed to you in any way. It would be the partnership's liability, not yours. But as a partner with the
income tax way it works on a partnership, you basically.
Also has flow through taxation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, I mean, there's going to be costs, I'm sure, and expenses that would write down the $50,000 each.
What if you made $100,000 total profit, though?
Congratulations, you're making money.
Well, let me tell you something, though, from running a business. There's a difference between making money and having money. there's a lot of times where, I mean, like, we had the best year that we ever had since I've been there last year mm-hmm. and showed a pretty good profit, but we didn't have any more cash in the bank than we did before we started.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's other things that go on. It's like you say, you write things down and stuff like that. So there's real money and there's that funny money, those things that you do by taking deductions and write-offs and depreciation and
yes.
stuff like that. That's not real money.
Yeah.
But it's real transactions.
Well, you know what they say?
No.
Mo money, mo problems.
Well, I'd like to have those problems.
So in the sweat equity example, I mean, basically you have no money changing hands, but basically the taxes are still due. The tax man pretty much always gets their share.
Yeah, just ask the Beatles.
Speaking of things that are kind of related to tax, but not really, did you know that another name for a shark among fishermen is the tax man?
Yes.
Have you heard that before?
I've heard that.
Where have you heard that?
There was a joke about it. That had to do something about, I don't know, it was a joke, something about sharks, and it was the tax man was the answer. Kind of like a lawyer joke.
Oh, really?
But it had to do with sharks. Can't remember exactly how it went.
Well, the reason they say this is because when you're out there fishing or whatever, and you're reeling in this beautiful fish you're planning on eating, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, bam, out of nowhere, a shark comes up and hits and takes out a huge chunk.
Yeah.
It's like taking their taxes.
That's right.
So the tax man always gets their share when they want it.
I saw a shark get his one time, though. I saw a guy reeling in like a 4-foot shark, mm-hmm. and this like 300-pound grouper came up, just opened its mouth and swallowed the shark whole.
Yeah, those are Goliath groupers.
Is that what they are?
Yeah.
I mean, if they could swallow a shark, they could swallow one of us.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah.
Speaking of actually snorkeling underneath the 7-mile bridge, I saw quite a few Goliath groupers underneath that bridge.
Man. And
let me tell you something. They're big.
Well, 300 pounds is big.
Yeah.
That's very large.
Yeah, and I think actually that video that you are talking about may have actually been shot down the Keys right there by the 7-mile bridge, actually.
Could have been. I saw that not that long ago, maybe 6 months or something like that.
Yeah, but no, that's kind of a fisherman slang for the shark is the tax man, so yeah. There's your bar trivia right there.
Well, I wish I could remember how that went, because it was a couple of sayings that were in there, and one is, a fine is a tax for doing something wrong, and a tax is a fine for doing something right.
I kind of like that. I agree with that. Now, another thing that might be taxable, which you might not think about, and as small business owners, this applies to you, and I guess it kind of applies to me a little bit, although I don't technically own my own business anymore.
That's all right. You're part of a large firm, a thriving firm, and you're leading the charge.
Where are we charging to? I don't know.
But charging up that hill of solvency.
So one thing that is taxable with no money changing hands is if you barter with somebody.
Yeah.
So basically, if you are trading
goods,
one product or service for another, or vice versa, or whatever, you know, there's not going to be an exchange for any kind of cash or anything like that. But the fair market value of the goods and service exchange is actually supposed to be reported to the IRS by both parties.
Well, I can understand that. There's been several times where there's like reciprocal customers, like ones that are customers of mine that I'm also a customer of theirs.
Yeah.
And I've often thought, I wonder if we should just not bill each other and just let it ride. But that would be a case where we'd still have to pay taxes on what we're not billing.
Yeah. Yeah. If you do that, you definitely have to report that to the IRS. Can we go off the record for a second?
Sure. It's okay to do that?
No. I
Is that what you
that.
Said?
Nope. Always report it. Always report it to the IRS.
Because this is Mike's tax advice. Mike's tax tips coming to you live.
That would be.
Or slightly recorded.
That would be tax fraud. Do not do that. One other thing I saw, too, about some sort of phantom income is if you do some sort of land swap. So if you have two businesses and they're trading land for whatever reason, and essentially you, the property you get is actually valued higher than the one you traded away, you would actually have to pay income on the difference between those two properties. So basically, if I have like a...
Well, it's all subjective.
That's true. But if I have a piece of property that fits the zoning requirements of what you want to do, and you have the property that fits the zoning requirements of what I want to do, and we trade it, whoever comes out the better is going to have to pay money on whatever the difference in value is. So yeah, there's a lot of ways you can actually have this spooky phantom income that will tax you.
Phantom income.
As if taxing isn't scary enough, they have to get a name like phantom income.
That's very taxing.
It is. Although not taxing advice.
Well, you know, when you were telling me about this, you kind of got me misled there because you said we were talking about ghost income.
Well,
so I looked up ghost income and I found phantom income, which you have just described, mm-hmm. and ghost revenue.
Oh, okay.
So we do have phantoms and ghosts.
That's right.
So the ghost revenue is...
And just so you know, whenever I do give you a topic... Uh-huh. I do try to mislead you just a little bit.
You lead me down a briny path there. But the ghost revenue, which I wasn't sure which topic, like I say, we were talking about, that's a thing too.
Yeah.
And what that has to do with is companies, this is mostly large companies, when they acquire other companies,
yeah,
they have to do something that is called a write-down on... These write-downs are called Deferred Revenue Purchase Accounting Adjustments and are required by GAAP, GAAP, which stands for Generally Accepted Accounting Principles.
That's right.
Now,
I love their jeans as well.
Yeah, the GAAP. I should warn you that I know nothing about accounting. I had to take Accounting 101 or whatever it was, the first accounting. I had to take it like six times before I finally passed it with a D. I mean, I had to drop it the first five times so I didn't get an F. And I finally passed it on the sixth try. I didn't think I was ever going to get out of accounting. So for some reason, that just doesn't make sense.
Is this in college?
Yeah, I was in college. But for some reason, when you take over another company, you have to write off their... projected income, and that's the way that they change it from the starting point for the other performance analyses to flow. So a lot of these companies don't like having to take this write-off because it affects what they're showing for their stockholders. Mm-hmm. And also, it affects performance bonuses for all the higher up guys that want to get their millions of dollars while everybody else is working for minimum wage.
They want to show bigger profits.
Yeah, so they're going back in. They write them off, but then somehow, when quarters pass within the fiscal year from when they wrote it off, they decide how much of that revenue that they have actually acquired that they wrote off because it was projected revenue, and they add it back in, even though it goes against GAAP, generally accepted accounting practices. Hmm. And they'll add it back in. So that's what that revenue is called, ghost revenue. And it's not technically legal. And if the SEC, which is not the football SEC.
Or the basketball SEC.
No, it's the one that monitors the stock market, Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yeah, that's right.
That one, yeah. Those guys. They come knocking on your door if they find out you're doing it because they don't like it. Yet there's a list of different companies like Broadcom Limited, Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, and Symantec Corporation that have been investigated for doing those types of things. So
I think actually I was listening to a podcast or a book on tape or something like that, and they were talking about Enron, and they were talking about how Enron would basically show these new investments that people had as income as well, and that's how they were basically to show their books, how they kept growing and have such big profits. And it was kind of a similar type thing because I think under GAAP, those were not supposed to be reported as actual income, but they were using that to kind of show that they were having these higher incomes.
Yeah, you're probably right. Either they weren't writing them off to start with, or they were writing them off and adding them back in.
Yeah. May not have been the new investments. Maybe it was something else that they were doing, but it was essentially kind of the same basic theory. Mm-hmm. They were showing these profits and this income from things that weren't really there.
If they hadn't realized.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So it was like a kind of a ghost income type situation as well.
Well, I think they were also playing with the value of stuff. And they would say, this value is projected to rise to this amount, so we're going to go ahead and claim that.
Yeah.
And it didn't, sometimes in a lot of cases, it didn't rise to that amount. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was just like, pick a number and put it down there.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be real. These numbers are supposed to be real, man. You can't just make them up.
Well, yeah. some creative accounting. I don't think creative accounting works in GAAP.
That's even worse than creative accounting, though.
Yeah, it's true.
No, and GAAP is not creative. GAAP is logical. Now, here's a tax season ghost story that should scare you.
Uh-oh.
Be afraid of ghost tax preparers. Now, I'm not talking about the spiritual ones or the ones floating around that look like white sheets. These ghost preparers take fees to help people do their taxes, but they lack proper credentials and they don't sign tax returns as required by laws. They run fly-by-night operations, setting up tables in shopping centers or even renting space between February and April, and then they disappear. They had a major problem with people who don't want to play by the rules, and they bounce on people who are unsuspecting and don't know the rules themselves. Often, ghost tax preparers take deductions that are not allowable and falsify things. When the taxpayer gets in trouble, there's nobody to go back to. Professional tax preparers must be either an attorney, a certified public accountant, registered with CTEC, which is the California Tax Preparers Council, or an enrolled agent, Qualified tax preparers will likely have certificates hanging on walls behind their desks.
And it says, I have the certificate. I made it myself. It's well, in crayon.
They could do that once they find out you're looking for it. Huh? The CTE lists these tricks that ghost tax preparers use to wriggle out of identifying themselves.
Rattling chains.
No, they don't do that. They put
saying boo.
Boo-hoo is what you'll be saying. They put self-prepared on tax returns instead of signing their names. They stick business labels on returns instead of signings. They claim they forgot to sign or say they'll sign after being paid. Taxpayers should check professionals' preparers' credentials before giving them any personal information. It says that tips for choosing a tax preparer. The IRS has a searchable directory with preparer tax identification numbers. That's PTIN is what that is. And it says, get that PTI in to see if they're all right. And it said, also beware of preparers who promise big refunds or base fees on a percentage of the refund.
Oh.
Because they've got an incentive to get a lot of money back for you.
Yeah.
And it said, ask to e-file. And most qualified preparers will have the option to file electronically. And insist on proper records. Bad preparers make such mistakes as filing returns using pay stubs instead of W-2 forms. So just look out for that in case you're, you know, confused on your taxes and you need looking for help and you don't want to pay a big bill to somebody for it.
Yeah.
And so you try to get it on the cheap.
Don't hire Casper and Beetlejuice CPAs.
And, you know, these taxes are not easy. If you want to capitalize on your deductions that you can get. I mean, if you're going to fill out the one with no deductions or whatever, was that the easy form?
1040 easy.
Yeah, if you want to fill that one out, that one's not too bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of self-explanatory. Still, though, it's kind of confusing
as
far as what you do. And nobody wants to get in trouble with the IRS.
No.
So there's a lot of fear involved with these things. But it's so complicated that even somebody like Donald Rumsfeld, remember Donald Rumsfeld? I think he was the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, he was on Bush's cabinet.
Yeah, he was a high-ranking guy in the Oval Office making decisions of national importance.
Yeah.
Well, he wrote a letter in April of 2014 to accompany his tax return that he was turning in. And this, you know, a guy like this, you'd think that he was pretty confident. He'd be pretty confident in what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
His letter reads, "Dear Sir or Madam, I have sent in our federal income tax and our gift tax returns for 2013. As in prior years, it is important for you to know that I have absolutely no idea whether our tax returns and our tax payments are accurate. I say that despite the fact that I am a college graduate and I try hard to make sure our tax returns are accurate. The tax code is so complex and the forms are so complicated that I know that I cannot have any confidence that I know what is being requested, and therefore I cannot and do not know, and I suspect a great many Americans cannot know, whether or not their tax returns are accurate. As in past years, I have spent more money than I wanted to spend to hire an accounting firm to prepare our tax returns, and I believe they are well qualified. This note is to alert you folks that I know that I do not know whether or not my tax returns are accurate, which is a sad commentary on governance in our nation's capital. If you have questions, let me know, and I will ask our accountants to be in touch with you to provide any additional information you may think you need. I do hope that at some point in my lifetime, and I am now in my 80s, so there are not many years left, the U.S. government will simplify the U.S. tax code so that those citizens who sincerely want to pay what they should are able to do it right and know that they have done it right. I should add that my wife of 59 years, also a college graduate, has signed our joint return, but she also knows that she does not have any idea whether or not our tax return payments are accurate. Sincerely, Donald Rumsfeld."
That's pretty funny.
If he couldn't do it, a guy like that couldn't do it. What chance do the rest of us mere mortals have?
Nothing. That's funny. I'd never heard that before.
I just stumbled across it. I couldn't believe that was in there. But throughout history, there have been many strange and unusual and weird taxes on things. So, you know me, I always like to, you know, find those types of weird things.
Yeah.
So
that's your stick.
These are ancient taxes from around the world.
All right.
I'm assuming, yeah, this is Latin. Pecunia non olet.
Pecunia non olet.
Money doesn't stink is a Latin saying. During the first century AD, Roman Emperor Vespasian placed a tax on urine. The buyers of the urine paid the tax. The urine from public urinals was sold as an essential ingredient for several chemical processes, like it was used in tanning, not exactly sure how, and also by launderers as a source of ammonia to clean and whiten woolen togas. Therefore, those who obtained valuable urine from collectors were charged a tax.
Oh my gosh.
In 1705, Russian Emperor Peter the Great placed a tax on beards, hoping to force men to adopt clean-shaven look that was common in Western Europe.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, you're going to be taxed.
I know.
And as aggressive as your beard is, it'll be a big tax. The French had a salt tax called the gabelle, which angered many and was one of the contributing factors to the French Revolution.
So you mean to tell me, tax me on salt, my beard, and peeing?
Yes.
I'd uprise too.
Those are all some of your favorite things, aren't they?
Pretty much. I don't know what's going on here.
You'd be uprising too, huh?
I would.
In 1885, our good neighbors to the north there, Canada, created the Chinese head tax, which taxed the entry of Chinese immigrants into Canada. The tax lasted until 1923, when a law was passed banning Chinese people from entering Canada altogether. So, didn't need the tax anymore because I couldn't come in.
I don't think that'd fly in the U.S.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, let's hope not.
Yeah.
Let's hope not.
That's crazy.
Now, these are ones that are specifically from England. And when I got to reading this list, I found, and it's no wonder the Beatles made that song. They literally have, through history, taxed anything that people need to try and get more money. I mean, I saw an article the other day that said, where does the money for the royal people, where do the royals get their money from?
Mm-hmm.
Well, with all these taxes, I know where they get their money from. It's unbelievable. King Henry I allowed knights to opt out of their duties to fight in wars by paying a tax. If you're a knight, you're supposed to fight in wars. You're not supposed to pay taxes to get out of it. That tax was called scutage. At first, the tax wasn't high, but when King John came to power and raised it to a rate of 300%, some claim that the excessive tax rate was one of the things that contributed to the creation of the Magna Carta.
Really?
Which limited the king's power. Oliver Cromwell placed a tax on royalists, who were his political opponents, taking one-tenth of their property. He then used that money to fund his activities that were aimed against the royalists.
Well, sounds like a great strategy.
Sounds like something that could happen right now.
Yeah, really?
With a different R party. All right, now these are all kind of related. This started in 1660, looks like the first one. England placed a tax on fireplaces. So if you had a fireplace in your house, you had to pay a tax. So guess what people did?
What'd they do?
They hid their fireplaces.
Really?
They would make a brick insert that would cover it up and fill it in so that it would look like they didn't have one.
That's kind of an unfair thing to tax.
Yeah. Well, then in 1696, 39 years later, or 36 years later, they come along and they tax windows. So the more windows in your house, the more taxes you paid. So what did people start doing?
Hiding their windows?
Building houses without windows.
Ah.
Or with very few windows, just very necessary windows. So you know what happened? They had to we had to remove that tax because it became a health problem. Everybody locked up in there and you didn't have proper ventilation and things like that.
All their bricked over fireplaces.
Yeah, bricked over fireplaces.
With no ventilation from windows.
Yeah, so they had to repeal that. In the 1700s, England placed a tax on bricks.
I thought they were going to place a tax on carbon monoxide.
So builders soon realized that they could use bigger bricks. So they started making bigger bricks so that they wouldn't use as many bricks because you were taxed by the brick. So what did the government do?
Regulated the size of bricks.
No, they passed a larger tax on bigger bricks. So they finally repealed those in 1850. Then... Even now, and I guess this is true because the most current information here is from 2012, so I would assume this is still current. England has a tax on televisions. If you own a television in your home, you must pay an annual fee, formerly called a television license, for each television you own. The money is used to finance programming on the BBC. Color televisions are taxed at a higher rate than black and white televisions. Interestingly enough, if a person is blind and owns a TV in his or her home, he or she still has to pay the tax, but only at 50%.
That doesn't seem like a good break.
Failure to pay this fee is subject to criminal penalties, and in 2012 alone, there were 155,000 convictions of people not paying their television tax.
A telly tax.
A telly tax? What's on the telly? I don't know. I had to get rid of it because we couldn't afford the tax.
Wow, that's a crazy tax.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of anything like that.
I hadn't either. So maybe somebody that's listening from the UK can verify whether that's accurate or if we just got hoaxed or something.
I don't
somebody
know.
Punked us.
Maybe so.
New York City, this is some states that have some funny laws, or funny taxes, I mean. New York City places a special tax on prepared foods. So sliced bagels are taxed once as food and again as prepared food, thus creating a sliced bagel tax. States like Iowa, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey exempt pumpkins from a sales tax, but only if they will be eaten and not carved. So if you're buying your pumpkins for Halloween, just say, yeah, I'm going to eat this sucker when I get home.
Yeah, I'm going to eat it.
That'll cost you less. I wonder what, if they tax you if you have sex with the pumpkin. They didn't mention that. That's not eating or carving.
Now we've come full circle.
In 2005, Tennessee began requiring drug dealers to anonymously pay taxes on any illegal substances they sold. So you just send one in without your name or anything, but pay your taxes and list your earnings from your drug sales.
Well, that becomes a kind of interesting thing when talking about the marijuana revenue. Because, I mean, if you sell marijuana...
The federal government doesn't recognize it.
Yeah, so, but do you still have to pay taxes for it?
I would say you do.
I bet you sure do.
Yeah. Let's see. In Oregon, double amputees get a $50 tax credit.
I think we could make that a little bit more.
You'd think?
I think so.
We could double it.
Yeah.
Now, I couldn't leave West Virginia out. In West Virginia, there is an additional tax on sparklers.
Really?
So, for whatever reason, sparklers you have to pay extra for. And who even likes sparklers? Sparklers are terrible.
They're not fun.
No, no fun at all.
They burn your hand when you get down to the bottom.
Now, Texas, that must be the state of Grinches. Because in Texas, Christmas tree decoration services are subject to a tax, but only if the decorator provides the decorations and ornaments. In addition, there is a tax on holiday-themed pictures that are meant to be placed on windows. So I don't know. They must have something against it there in Texas.
Christmas, you know, people are splurging on their Christmas pictures. We can tax that.
Yeah.
We can tax it.
You can put a picture up in your window of Christmas. By God, you can pay us some money. In New Mexico, this is a good one. In New Mexico, people over 100 years old are tax exempt, but only if they're not dependents. Now, that's a pretty good bet. You're not going to have too many that hit that. You're not going to be losing too much as a state.
Yeah.
When you look at that demographic.
That law's not worth the paper it's printed on.
100-year-old people that are living independently.
That is stupid.
In Tennessee, again, there is a tax. This one should affect you. You better hope they don't spread it over here.
Uh-oh.
In Tennessee, there is a tax on all litigation. The amount varies case by case, but it can be as low as $1 for a parking violation case. The tax tends to discourage frivolous lawsuits.
Does it, or does it actually just restrain people's access to the courts?
Ah, I knew you'd have one of them lawyerly type answers. Now, here's another one from the IRS. The IRS taxes stolen property. The 1040 instructions say that you should report it as stolen property and list the dollar amount that you received for this stolen property. However, doing that would be self-incrimination, from which we are protected by the Constitution.
Fifth Amendment, yeah.
Yeah. Therefore, one has the option of reporting it as other income.
That sounds like a good idea. I've actually never seen the stolen income line on a tax sheet.
Evidently, it's on there on the 1040 instructions. If you got stolen goods, you are supposed to report it as income.
Huh.
Or else they can charge you for it.
You think there's a lot of people out there stealing stuff and filing their taxes and claiming it?
My guess is zero, except for, I don't know, you always see those ones, the dumb crook things. Yeah. Those are the only ones that are probably claiming it.
There's some 100-year-old independent person living in New Mexico who does it.
Doesn't know any better.
Yeah,
that's out robbing places.
Yeah, they do it.
That's how his company's independent, because he's robbing everybody.
Well, that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs.
So legal briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions and see if he remembers the different legal terms that I was tossing about during the show. So...
I hope so.
What is a foreclosure?
Foreclosure is when they take your house, that the bank decides you're not paying your bill and they foreclose on your house, and there's certain processes they have to go through to do it, but then the bank takes ownership of your house.
That's right. Now, the alternative to foreclosure would be what's called a short sale.
What and is that's a short sale? That's where you sell the house, but you're selling it for less than what you owe on it, so you have to get permission from the bank in order to do it.
That's right. And what is kind of the interesting thing about a foreclosure and a short sale as far as today's topic? Do you remember?
Well, it has to do with phantom income.
That's right.
Because they both leave you subject to phantom income.
That's right, because you have to pay tax on the amount of the difference.
That's
the amount
right.
of debt that is canceled out.
So it makes the poor even poorer.
That's right.
Keep them down. That's right. When you get to the top and you've stepped on all those people to get there, you don't want to have to look at them again on your way back down.
Now, if you do get some sort of cancellation of debt, what is the form that is sent to you?
What did you say, like a 1099-C?
That's right.
Wow. I pulled that one out of nowhere.
Yeah, you must have taken accounting class like 6 or 7 times.
Yeah, I remember all that. And you know what the funny part was? I sailed through the second accounting, like 102 or whatever. I sailed through that with a B on my first try.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what the difference was.
Just different teacher?
Well, I don't know. I had a lot of teachers over them 6 tries. It wasn't the same one. Are you back again, Smurl?
Now, there was a certain law passed to help people out who had this phantom income from foreclosure or short sale on a house on their primary residence. Remember what that was called?
Mortgage Forgiveness Act.
That's right. Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act.
Debt Relief Act.
Same thing. And that coupled with one other thing, the insolvency exclusion is one of the ways to kind of get rid of that debt. Now, the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act is actually expired now at this point, so really you don't have much of a choice. So,
well, they're through flipping houses upside down in Florida now.
Just flip it.
They've strengthened the banking laws. That's what that what was it called? Dodd-Frank was involved in tightening that up so that people didn't give people houses they couldn't afford.
Yeah, well, that was part of the problem down there. They kept refinancing them and giving them these huge balloon payments that would come due. And they said, "Well, don't worry about that balloon payment. We'll just refinance it before it comes due." Well, eventually you can't refinance it.
Yeah.
So
they don't tell you that though at the beginning, or else you don't hear it, or else you think everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's more than just mere puffery.
Puffery.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Well,
did pretty good. You got, I think you were paying attention when we were talking.
I was. Well, I wanted to hear about all those phantoms and ghosts. It's that time of year.
It is.
I didn't want to get spooked by them.
Well, this is kind of a soft lead into Halloween. We started off with talking about pumpkins last week, and then this week we're talking about
pumpkins and creepy dolls,
ghost income,
and phantoms.
But next week we're going to talk about actual real ghosts.
Can those words go together?
I think so. I just said them.
All right. Well, we'll have to get our ghost spectacles on to see things about ghosts.
Ghost spectacles?
Yes. You can't see them if you don't have your ghost spectacles on.
Do you own ghost spectacles?
No, that's why I had never seen any.
Good to know. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am...